How many of you are prepared for tomorrow's eclipse? Have you bought your glasses? Have you made a plan? My former mother-in-law, Barbara, lives in Conway, Arkansas, which is outside of the town of Little Rock. It's a sort of an obscure little town, but evidently, the eclipse is longer there than in most areas of this country. So people are flocking to Conway, Arkansas, and evidently people are selling their backyards as campgrounds and making a buck. And there's lots of a new little paraphernalia that's been created. All the hotels are booked. They're making eclipse pancakes. I saw eclipse made out of Oreos. They go from this to this, you know, the it's crazy. Mass hysteria, kind of like a rock concert in the cosmos. My husband Chris has just flown up to Buffalo, where my stepdaughter and he are going to be chasing around the eclipse, trying to find an area where there isn't a lot of clouds around Niagara Falls. So that's what he's doing. Are you ready? Evidently, when the moon aligns with the sun behind it, you can see this huge shape, right? And then the light is so brilliant that you have to be careful about your eyes and wear special glasses. I was reading a little bit about the moon. Scientific theory, of course, has changed, as it always does, but the latest theory is that billions of years ago, planet Earth was smaller, but there was some kind of huge impact between an almost planet-like thing and what is now Earth. And out of that impact, two things came out of it, the Earth as we know it, and then a piece of us separated, which became the moon. But the moon is small enough to not have a good gravitational pull, so there is no life on it. It's just a rock. Whereas we have the miracle of life and water and all the creatures that God has made. But so the moon, according to this latest scientific theory, is really part of the Earth. Something that got a little separated but isn't so far away. And in that alignment, that perfect alignment with the sun, we will see its magnificent shadow. Today we are given the final scene in the Gospel of John. Easter is a season, it is not a day. Easter is 50 days. The ancient church deliberately set it up that way because Easter is supposed to be longer than Lent. We are supposed to feast for longer than we fasted. The good news is supposed to trump our penitence. There should be no comparison between the glory of Easter and the reverence and penitence of Lent. Easter defeats Lent. If it was March Madness, it wouldn't even be close. But in this country, we really stink at sustaining joy. We're so good at Lent and keeping up our fasting and all that, but once we hit the good part, we say, let's have one party and then we're done and we'll forget that we're supposed to feast. I challenge you to keep rejoicing. Don't stop having it be Easter. We're still there. Another reason why we have 50 days is because the resurrected Christ didn't just show up once. The resurrected Christ showed up again and again and again in different ways in the different Gospels to different groups of people at different times. But one of the things that I'm fascinated by is the resurrected Christ seems to only have appeared to people who loved him, which tells me that as much as you might try to understand resurrection intellectually, it's more about the heart. If you want to see the resurrected Christ, you have to start by learning to love the Jesus that walked the earth before the crucifixion. That's the first step. So the disciples are huddled together in this upper room, presumably the same one that the Last Supper was in. And they're confused, they're scared, because they've been scared, because Jesus was taken from them and crucified, but they're also excited because they've started hearing news of him showing up, and they're confused and they don't understand, and maybe they don't believe Mary Magdalene and Peter and some other women. Maybe they think they've just lost their minds. So they've got the door shut and locked, and they're talking and they're trying to figure out what's going on. And Jesus just shows up. I don't think we'll ever fully understand how it worked. I don't think it makes sense to the rational mind, this resurrected Christ. I mean, because he didn't walk through the door and yet they touched him. So how does that make any sense? It just doesn't. It's kind of like the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. It doesn't make any sense, three in one and one in three. But it's supposed to be that one way to remind us that God is mystery. Well, the resurrected Christ is mystery. How a physical body could just show up, well, my brain's too small. I have to leave that up to God. And even the scientists, I don't think they're going to figure it out either. Jesus shows up, and in the Gospel of John, he says the same thing in his appearances. So I figure his words must have been important. When he shows up, he says, "Peace be with you. Peace be with you." In our ancient liturgy, halfway through, at our sort of mini intermission, when Mark and I say the announcements, we start it by saying, "Peace be with you." Because we believe we're getting closer to heaven. And if we saw the resurrected Christ, that's what he would say to us, and that's what we're supposed to say to each other in resurrection life. Peace be with you. Because the resurrected Christ comes to bring us a peace that we could never achieve ourselves, a peace that passes all understanding, a peace that only can be attained by following him, not because of anything we could figure out, that's for sure. How are we doing with finding it ourselves? He shows them his hands and his side. He shows them his wounds. You'd think he would show them how handsome he looked or how vibrant, but he shows them the places where he hurt. Because that's how we really know each other, isn't it? You'll think I'm fine if I say, "Oh, I got a degree here, I've done this for work," but if I tell you my struggles, then I'll feel like you really know me and I know you. Jesus wanted them to know him. So he showed them where he'd been wounded. And then he says something really important, but Thomas wasn't there. Thomas gets a lot of attention. I don't know where he was, whether he'd gone to the grocery store or McDonald's or the pharmacy. I don't know. But he wasn't in the upper room. And so the gospel makes a big deal about Thomas because Thomas couldn't believe it happened until he actually saw Jesus and touched his wounds. But I don't want the focus today to go to Thomas. I think we've spent a lot of time on Thomas, and I'm glad he got to believe. Good for him. But I want us to focus on what Jesus was saying. So he shows them his hands and his side, and then he says something. And again, I think his words are really important. He says to them, "As the Father has sent me, so I send you. As the Father has sent me, so I send you." We Christians, we get all caught up in believing in Jesus. And I think that's very important. I'm glad that Thomas came to believe. And belief doesn't mean you know anything or you're certain of anything. It means putting your trust in something. And we put our trust in Jesus. But that's not the end of it for us. Belief is just the first step for those who follow Jesus. A lot of Christians nowadays will say, "Are you saved?" And if you say yes, they'll be like, "Okay, great," and they leave. Our job is not over just because we believe. We're not just supposed to sit around and try to be nice. No. Jesus sent those disciples out. He said, "As the Father has sent me, so I send you." You know, the word disciple means learner, learning about Jesus. Those disciples then became what we call apostles. And the word apostle means the one who is sent out. If we're going to really do this thing, if we're going to really follow Jesus, we can't just stop at putting our trust in him. We have to listen to what he said. And he said, "Get out there. Go on. As the Father sent me, I'm sending you." And in our worship that we do today, you come here to be fed and nurtured, but then we say, go into the world to love and serve the Lord. You have work to do. God has a job for you. It's not enough just to believe. We also have some stuff we have to do while we're here on this earth. We have a job to do. It's up to us. "As the Father has sent me, I send you," he said. I believe that every single one of you has been created by the designer of the universe to be just as you are. God has given you a unique set of skills, of qualities, of attributes, and you are supposed to stand in just the right way in your life so that the light of Christ can shine through you and into the world. I had to do a funeral down in Bonita Springs, which is near Fort Myers. And at the reception, I met a couple that I believe are doing a really good job figuring out what their job is. And in the Christian journey, we call this discernment. The woman grew up in Colombia, South America. She's a fluent native Spanish speaker. She got educated in the United States, where she met her husband, who is a mechanical engineer, also fluent in Spanish. They worked and taught in the United States. After they made enough money, they retired to try to figure out exactly what God was calling them to do. And I think they might have figured it out, or they're as close to anyone I've ever met. What they do is they go to Ecuador, where they go to remote villages, and she teaches in fluent Spanish, and he instructs as well, and they help the villages dig a well and build a water system so that the people of the villages have running water. Now that's something. Next week, we'll have Don Schundorfer, also a mechanical engineer who figured out how to make a wheelchair that most of us could actually buy for someone in the developing world and change the trajectory of a human life. What about you? The cool thing about discernment is it's not just about your job in life like a big strategic plan. No, God usually works day to day, hour to hour. And if we're going to be sent out, we need to every day wake up and say, God, what is my job today? What am I called to do today? And it shifts as we age and grow and learn more or retire or go back to school, or maybe we're grieving and lost a loved one. We're impacted by the things that we have gone through. They can become part of our vocation. If we've lost someone to cancer, we may end up ministering to people who have cancer or who are losing their loved ones. If we've suffered an injury, we may end up helping people who suffered a same injury. I cannot tell you what job God has given to you. I can help you, and I'm happy to meet with you at any time. But part of our job as the church is to take care of each other, to help each other get well and healthy, and to figure out what our jobs are. The human being is most fulfilled when we're doing what we believe is God's will for us. Even in the Garden of Eden, God said to Adam and Eve, go and till the ground, take care of this garden. We were made to do God's work, to bring about the kingdom. Remember how the moon was actually part of the earth? You are part of God. You were made as part of God's creation, and you were designed, given dominion over that creation, designed to help it. And you and I will never be fulfilled or joyful or really understand who we are until we are of service, because that's what we were created for. We were created to give our lives away. And in doing so, we will be so filled with joy and blessing. What if tomorrow at the eclipse, instead of this solid rock, what if the moon were a diamond and the light was shining through it? Wouldn't that be blinding and beautiful? I think that as followers of the light of Christ, our job is to get aligned with that light. To be so aligned with Jesus that we're standing right where his light can shine through us and into the world. And the more aligned we get with that light, the more powerful it becomes. Let that eternal, magnificent, mysterious light of Christ shine through you, through your gifts, through your intricate details of who you are, your hands, your face, your voice. Manifest that light into the world, people of God, because that's who you are. As the Father has sent me, Jesus says, I send you. Get out there, go to work. Amen.